Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everyone. My name is Dr. David Orman, and you are listening to another 9 to Find show with my host, who is slightly late here.
I am slightly late, Lisa Lytle. Hello, everybody. Working hard, Monday.
Today's topic is on decision-making. How we go about making decisions, how we can make the best possible decisions, and what organ is responsible for making decisions. 99% of the time, if you ask people what organ is making responsible or is responsible for the decisions or is making responsible decisions, I would say most people would say the brain.
Mm-hmm. I would have said that prior to knowing what it is.
I'd say a few smart alecks would have something else to say, or we're keeping this above deck.
It's a family show. It's a family show.
In all seriousness, the organ that is, in fact, responsible for making decisions is the gallbladder. The gallbladder, among its many functions, such as breaking down fats, is the one that basically says, I will take the information and I will pick, based on a number of factors, what decision to make. And when the gallbladder is healthy and when the gallbladder is strong, that is when we make our best decisions that are responsible. Well, apparently the gods agree with me because the thunder shook our house here. That is when we make our decisions that are inspired and ideal and for the good, not only for self, but for others as well. You know how you know you made a good decision when it's a week or two or a year later and say, you know what, if I had to do it again, I would have done the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. I must say, I struggle with minor decisions. Big ones, I'm there, I'm a rock, you can count on me. But little ones, don't ask me where to go for lunch because I'd be like, I don't know. Give me two choices and I still can't decide. So what is that?
It's interesting because back when I was in school, actually in graduate school in Springfield, there was a famous study that had come out that was talking about athletes, and these were Olympic caliber athletes, world class athletes, and they said, you know, something major, something tragic happened, say, you know, their mom died or a grandfather or something that's you know, very upsetting. They can handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had, you know, an event, just say
right,
three or four or a week ahead. They can handle it. But when, you know, their roommate forgot to pay the Visa bill or, you know, their girlfriend spilled a Gatorade on their couch, something relatively minor, that would throw off their game.
Yeah, I would relate to that.
So I would think that is very much a human quality.
Oh,
but what typically happens is we have a tendency to obsess about it. And because the sequence goes like this, it's small, so I can think and figure and decide my way out of it. And it has a tendency to grow and grow and grow and grow. Whereas when something is large, we have a tendency to break it down into pieces and say, okay, it's too big. I can't handle all of this, but I can handle this little piece. So we actually work in exactly the opposite direction.
That's really interesting. Thank you. Because I'm sure someone out there that's listening feels the same way I do. Big decisions, no problem. Small ones, like, oh, don't make me decide where to go eat tonight. So, yeah. Mixed. So, and I do react the same way even with life traumas or big life challenges. The big ones I can handle, the small ones. You know, if the coffee pot were to break and I didn't have hot coffee in the morning, it would be a tragedy. Like, it's just something I don't deal well with, those little small things. I anticipate, so it's almost like I feel like, okay, life can be challenging and I just want all the little things to work well. So, yeah, it throws me off my game. How's that?
Yeah,
for
there
sports
you go.
Analogy.
There you go. And the other thing is sometimes, you know, it's hard to work on emotions at times. It's hard to work on our decision-making ability or say, mental aspects of it. But it's always, we can always start somewhere. And the place that we can always start with when in doubt is, in fact, the physical. So when we keep our gallbladder strong, when we keep our system healthy, that is a place we can always use to go to the default mode. I don't know where to begin. There are too many things. Hey, wait a second. I could breathe.
Yeah.
And I could calm down. And I could do something, take something, do something physically that can change my chemistry. And when I change my chemistry, the perspective on something changes. And then when the perspective on things change, I open myself up to, you know, the entire field of possibilities.
So what is one simple physical thing someone can ingest, take, or do, maybe breathe, I don't know, an exercise that they could do to get the gallbladder moving?
Oh, no, it's a couple of them. Well, I have a really specific, detailed breath course that is, we sell it by itself, and it's also included free as part of Dr. Orman's Wellness School. So there are specific methods, and they're fantastic. They can be done anywhere, by anyone. It takes, you know, 3 minutes, if that, 2 minutes to learn, and you begin to notice the difference very, very, very quickly. So that's one of the things. One of the very, very best substances that I think is very valuable for the gallbladder is actually rubbing castor oil on the surface of the skin that is associated, that is above the gallbladder. So essentially you're looking at the right quadrant, kind of on the side, maybe like below the chest, breast area. So you basically have skin oil, and then a dry towel, and then a hot pack. And
leave castor
that,
oil.
Castor oil. And then leave that on for a good 30 to 45 minutes. That is a fantastic thing to do.
So what? Oh, go ahead.
Please. Go ahead.
I was going to just interject with, I was curious, aside from the physical things that they could take and or do, how can they practice decision-making?
Practice decision-making by making decisions as much as possible. Start with small ones, ones that, you know what, I'm going to erase that, and I'm going to take a different approach to it. You have X number of quality decisions that you can make a day. And that number is probably around 10 to 15.
Right.
So how can I alleviate or release some of the decisions? Part of it is getting in patterns. You know, some of the big name successful, you know, monster successful business people, you know what they do? They wear black or blue or gray suits.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, it's blue and gray. That's it. You know, my decision today is blue or gray. And they pick it. And others, you know, Monday I eat here, and Tuesday I eat here, and Wednesday I eat here, and they get in a routine. So they don't have to, quote, unquote, waste decisions on things that are relatively trivial.
I can't believe you just said that, because I am reading a fascinating book, which I got for my birthday, and it's awesome. And it's all about rituals of creative and artistic people. And a lot of them did exactly what you just said. They would even dine daily at the same exact cafe, eat the same exact food. They limited the minor decisions in their lives so that their mind could continue to work on their creative endeavors without having to worry about all that other stuff that people obsess over. So, yeah, very interesting. I wouldn't have put that all together, but, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, one of my favorite people on the planet, Nikola Tesla. He was quirky, odd, strange, and brilliant. And he would do very specific things every single day. So it would take the decision-making, the mundane decision-making processes out of his hands.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to do this. I don't have to make a decision on it. And I don't have to waste my decision-making energy.
Exactly.
So those are the things that you can be doing. You've been listening to another 9 to Find show with Lisa Lytle and David Orman. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks.